Ransomware is a subtype of malware, which is malicious software that prevents its victims from accessing their data. So that might mean keeping them from logging into their cloud storage, but it might also mean encrypting their data on their machine so there's no way to access it ever again, unless they have the necessary decryptor, which is a piece of software or sometimes just a key that allows for the decryption of that encrypted, locked down data. The specifics of all this, though, are often less important than the practical reality of it. If you are attacked by a ransomware gang or hacker, your stuff, maybe your personal files, maybe your business files, all your customer information, your valuable trade secrets, your tax data, anything that is stored digitally might be completely inaccessible to you, and possibly even prone to deletion, though that might not even be necessary since strong encryption is essentially the same thing as deletion for most intents and purposes. But all that data is gone, held hostage, until and unless you pay some kind of ransom to the person or group that encrypted it, and which now holds the key to its decryption. Most ransomware software is transmitted to its victims' computers via a Trojan, which is a kind of malware that seems like real-deal software that you actually want or need to install, and folks are generally tricked into downloading and installing it because of that presumed legitimacy. So maybe you receive what looks like a software update for a tool you use at work, and it turns out the update was faked, and what you installed was actually a Trojan that installed malware on your computer, and consequently, on your entire network instead. Or maybe you pirated some software, and alongside the fake copy of Photoshop you installed, a Trojan also carried another snippet of code that then in the background, when your computer was hooked up to the internet, downloaded malware that looked for private data and encrypted it. At some point after ransomware is delivered and installed, your data successfully encrypted and inaccessible, you will typically receive the ransom demand. For a while, this was kind of an ad hoc thing, in some cases targeting people randomly on early internet Usenet groups, in others, big companies and other wealthy entities being specifically targeted, and then ransomware teams calling or emailing or texting them directly because they knew who they were hitting. In recent years, this has become a more distributed and mainstream effort, akin to an organized business. And that mainstreamification was partially enabled by the dawn of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, which allow for relatively anonymous transactions with strangers, and the development of ransomware that is self-contained in that it can install itself, find the right, valuable files, and then demand a ransom from its victims, providing that victim with the proper Bitcoin wallet or other crypto banking system into which they need to deposit a fixed amount of money in that less trackable digital currency. The software can then, still autonomously, either decrypt the files once the ransom is paid, or delete them, killing them off forever if the ransom is not paid by a set deadline. Other variations on this theme exist, and some ransomware does not use encryption as a motivator to pay, but instead locks down users' machines, displays some kind of demand for money, purporting to be from a government agency, or lying about having encrypted or stolen something of value but not actually having done so, or it threatens to install illegal pornographic images of minors or something like that on the victim's machine if they don't pay the ransom. By far, the most popular approach to ransomware today, though, is encryption-based, and recent evolutions in the business model backing ransomware has escalated its use, especially what's become known as ransomware as a service, which was popularized by a Russian hacker group calling itself Reval that started using it against a variety of targets globally to devastating and profitable effect. What I'd like to talk about today is another group that has made successful use of this business model, and a recent investigation into and operation against that group. You're listening to Let's Know Things. I'm Colin Wright. Learn more about Let's Know Things, subscribe to receive free email updates, and/or become a supporter to receive monthly bonus episodes at letsknowthings.com. First observed by cybersecurity entities in 2019, LockBit quickly became one of the most prolific and effective ransomware as a service providers in the world. They're offering a product called LockBit 2.0, representing the most used ransomware variant globally in 2022, accounting for something like 23% of all ransomware attacks in the US in 2023, and around 44% of all such attacks globally that same year. According to the FBI, LockBit has been used to launch around 1,700 ransomware attacks in the U.S. since 2020. And according to the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, about $91 million worth of ransoms were paid in the U.S. alone over the past 3 years. And it's estimated that number is in the hundreds of millions when we include targets around the world. LockBit's offerings work like many other ransomware as a service offerings, in that they provide what amounts to a dashboard filled with tools that allow users, those who wish to deploy ransomware attacks, those users being LockBit's customers, it gives them everything they need to do so. And most of their offerings allow even folks with little or no technical knowledge to launch a successful ransomware campaign. It is that user-friendly and intuitive. Hackers using LockBit announced the 2.0 version of the service by attacking professional services giant Accenture in 2021, using what's called a double extortion approach, which involves encrypting their victim's data and then threatening to release it if their victim does not pay up. They then hit French electrical systems and administrative and management services companies, alongside a French hospital, a group of British automotive retailers, a French office equipment company, the California Finance Administration, the Port of Lisbon, and Toronto's Hospital for Sick Children in 2022. In that latter case, backtracking after realizing a children's hospital was hit, the group formally apologizing for what they called a violation of their rules by a member of their group, who they claimed was no longer part of their affiliate program. They provided a free decryptor for the hospital so it could regain access to its data. And that response gestures at the larger opportunities and problems associated with this kind of business model. LockBit is run by a group of people who develop the software tools and provide the services backing up those tools to help anyone who wants to use their product successfully launch ransomware attacks against whomever they want. There are apparently rules about who they can attack, but that's kind of like being a gun store operator who tells their customers that they are not allowed to shoot anyone, and if they do, they'll have to take their gun away. They can certainly have those rules in place, but by the time they take back the gun that they sold to a person who ends up shooting someone else with it, some damage has already been done. That was the case with the Children's Hospital as well. The business models of ransomware as a service schemes vary, and some groups allow their customers to just pay a one-time set licensing fee, or sometimes a recurring licensing fee. Others have profit-sharing schemes, while still others have affiliate programs of some flavor. LockBit seems to have landed on a scheme in which they take something like 20% of whatever their customers, those using their LockBit tools, are able to get as a ransom. And just like other software as a service companies, LockBit is thus incentivized to continue providing better and better services, lest their customers leave and use one of their competitors' offerings instead. Thus, in mid-2022, they released LockBit 3.0, and among other innovations, it offered a bug bounty program, which provides payouts to security researchers who find errors or flaws or vulnerabilities in their code. Something that companies like Microsoft and Google do, but not something other ransomware gangs have typically done in the past. The attacks kept coming through 2022 and 2023. And though the U.S. Department of Justice announced criminal charges against one Russian national for his alleged connection to LockBit as an affiliate, and the arrest of another for his participation in a LockBit-oriented campaign, the hits just kept coming. LockBit affiliates attacking a French luxury goods company, a German car equipment manufacturer, a chain of Canadian bookstores, the Hong Kong branch of the China Daily newspaper, the Taiwanese TSMC semiconductor company, the port of Nagoya in Japan, U.S. aerospace and defense company Boeing, the Chicago Trading Company, and Alphadyne Asset Management, and it kicked off 2024 by encrypting the computer system of Fulton County, Georgia. On February 19th, 2024, the UK's National Crime Agency, working with Europol and agencies from 9 other countries, seized Lockbit's online assets, including more than 200 crypto wallets, 34 servers located in 8 countries, and about 11,000 domains used by Lockbit and its affiliates as part of its ransomware installation and payout process. They discovered that some of the data supposedly deleted by the group when their victims paid their ransoms was not deleted as promised, and they released decryptors to free the data of victims who had not paid ransoms and who had thus been going without access to their data, in some cases for a long time. They also issued 3 international arrest warrants and 5 indictments that target other people related to Lockbit's operations, and they've issued a reward of up to $15 million for information about Lockbit associates. This operation, called Operation Kronos, took years to set up and months to complete once it was ready to go. And though the agencies behind the operation say they've still got plenty left to do, as those in charge of Lockbit are still in the wind, some ransomware tools are still functioning, at least partially, and thousands of accounts associated with Lockbit affiliates have been identified but not yet shut down, it's also being seen as a pretty solid success, allowing them to develop a universal decryptor for Lockbit 3.0 and taking out much of the online infrastructure Lockbit relied upon to function, not to mention, no doubt, a fair bit of its reputation, as it's likely many of its potential customers will now flee to other offerings for their ransomware as a service needs. All that said, ransomware continues to be a significant threat for individuals, but especially for business entities, agencies, and organizations of any size. And there are plenty of other options out there for such tools, and only so many cybercrime agencies capable of tackling them. And it seems to take a lot longer to do the tackling than it does to set up a successful, large-scale ransomware-as-a-service business. So the combination of potent encryption tools, automated services, and a means of earning fairly consistent income seems likely to keep ransomware tools of this kind in the money for the foreseeable future. And that means even with these periodic takedowns of people involved with the larger scale entities in this space, this approach to siphoning money from wealthy entities from a distance will probably continue to grow until the next, more profitable and effective version of the same finally arrives. The book I'd like to recommend today is called Demon by Daniel Suarez. This is a novel that was eventually turned into a series, and it is topical in the sense that it is oriented around an artificial intelligence that starts to become a bit more than it originally seemed. Some of the references and some of the concepts are a little bit dated. It's an older book. It's actually impressive because of when it was written, how much it got right in terms of how this space is evolving, but some of it doesn't quite hold up just in terms of the way the commonly accessible version of generative AI in particular has evolved over the past year or two. But that being said, it's still an interesting extrapolation on some of the worst case scenarios of how artificial intelligence evolution could move forward, especially if there's somebody who's genuinely malicious behind the deployment of such tools, and the way the power and influence of a malevolent AI entity could scale up pretty rapidly if such a thing was allowed to happen and get past the initial stages of that scaling. Now, if any of that sounds interesting to you, consider picking up a copy of Demon, that's D-A-E-M-O-N, by Daniel Suarez. You can subscribe to receive email updates, find show notes, and other such content, and support this show financially, receiving additional bonus episodes as a thank you at letsknowthings.com. Learn more about me and my work at Colin.io. Subscribe to my other news-focused podcast, One Sentence News, wherever you get your pods, or at onesentencenews.com, and say howdy on social media. I'm at Colin is my name on Instagram and Twitter, and Colin Wright on Facebook and YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Colin Wright, and I'll talk to you again next week.